Tôi không sao. How are you all today? Great. I heard that there's a disaster going around in the country as well. Okay, so before we start the sermon, let's take a moment to bring our palms together in veneration to the Enlightened One, the one who showed us the path to the ultimate liberation, our teacher, our master, the supremely enlightened Lord Buddha. We'll chant the Namaskara 3 times to pay our homage to the Supreme One. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. With the permission from the Noble Triple Gem and Anagarika Mahatas, Anagarika Mahatnyas, and our beloved devotees. You know, it's great to see how courageous you all are, especially in a time like this. So when there's rain and it's cold around you, and the environment is very cold, and when it's time to wake up in the morning, what do you feel? You're on a cozy bed, wrapped up. Now the alarm goes off. What do you feel? Jumping out of the bed? Is that what you feel directly at the start, at first? Sometimes you might feel that, if there's 5 more minutes for me to get wrapped up in the bed, to stay cozily in the bed, just 5 more minutes. And then after 5 minutes pass, just one more minute. If there's someone who wakes you up, and you tell them, one more minute. But that is the default routine that you used to do. But today, you're present here. You have come here to listen to the Dhamma, to listen to the teachings of the Lord Buddha. You have come here. Just think about how courageous your life is. How courageous it has become. Just think about that and rejoice in that. Because courage is one of the 5 spiritual faculties that you need. It is something that you have to develop. You're not born with it. So there are 5 spiritual faculties. The first one is, so in Pali they are called Shraddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Prajna. So these 5 spiritual faculties are with you. It is in the mind. But one of these faculties is very strong for any person. It could be Shraddha for someone. It could be Virya for someone. It could be Sati, Samadhi, or Prajna for someone. Either one of these, or one of these faculties out of these 5, is very strong. That person is very strong in that faculty. So you might see people who's very strong in Shraddha. So when translated these terms into English, Shraddha is faith, the conviction that you have. And Virya is courage. Sati is your awareness or your mindfulness. Samadhi is the concentration, the ability to concentrate. And then Prajna is your wisdom. So now you see that all these 5 faculties are things that you can actually develop, things that you can actually improve. These are spiritual abilities that the mind has. So, when broken down into Shraddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, Prajna, or I'll write them on the board. When you have these five faculties, five spiritual faculties, you always have them, but one of these is very strong for people, for anyone, any given person. But only the Lord Buddha can actually scan you and analyze you and say that this is the faculty that you're strong in, this is the faculty that you're strong in, and whatnot. But for all of us, we have to develop these in order to, on our path towards Nibbana. Because can you see that, have you heard of the 10 paramita or the 10 perfections? So these five goes hand in hand with them. So even in the 10 perfections, you have courage, the perfection of courage. And then you have the perfection of wisdom, and then the perfection of faith or conviction. So these go hand in hand, the perfection of samadhi or concentration. These go hand in hand with the perfections, the 10 perfections. Because these are faculties that you can improve. The more you improve them, the faster that you go towards Nibbana, or the quality of your understanding improves. So, just think about it. Today, you woke up in the morning when it was raining. So, I think it was raining for 2 days straight. In the past 2 days, it was raining without stopping. It was a very light rain, but these types of rains are the most dangerous because they're consistent. Although there's just little amount of water, it's not a heavy rain, but a small rain, and it's consistent throughout 2 days. These types of rains are the rains which gives rise to landslides, because it consistently keeps on raining, and then it doesn't give the soil to harden. It doesn't give the soil to soil time to harden. So it consistently removes or goes run, the water runs under the soil, between the soil and the rock. And then, after some time, the whole block of soil just slides down that rock. That's what you call a landslide. So similarly, that is the same thing that you have to do in practicing the path. The more you're consistent, the more you're actually attacking at your defilements. When you're consistent with it, then you're not given time for the defilements to grow back, for the defilements to improve. You're not given time for that. You're consistently attacking. You're consistently being aware. You're consistently concentrating yourself on the Dhamma. And then when the mind does that, then it consistently removes defilements. It doesn't give time for the defilements to grow back. So therefore, ultimately comes a point where the whole block just slides down. That's when you call it an arahatanansi. That's when you call it arahatanansi. So that's a different point, a side note. But just think about how courageous you were when you woke up in the morning. So it was raining and it's very cold, especially on a cold day. You feel like, I mean, what do cats do? if you have seen cats or dogs, what do they do in a very cold morning? If there's mist all around them, they just go into a very warm place and then curl up and they just sleep. They don't even wake up to have breakfast. Because that sleep is very worthy for them. It's very valuable for them. Because they feel like, I mean, why do I need to wake up? They feel very lazy. But you all are not like that. You woke up in the morning. And that improves your courage. That develops your courage. It might seem like a little step, but These little steps put together completes a whole journey. It's a little step at a time that you take. So your courage, the way you apply courage into your life, the way your mind develops courage might differ when you're practicing the path more. So for example, it could come to a point where you're very courageous not to exit your practice. So you consistently keep your mind lean towards the Dhamma, which is again samadhi. You consistently keep your concentration onto the Dhamma, and you don't let the mind drift away from that path. That is again courage. So courage can come in different guises, but this is one guise. This is one improvement that you can do. This is just a simple step. Wake up to the alarm. That's a simple step. That's why Guru Angad has asked us to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning. That might seem like a challenge at first, but it is not. And there are some children here in the 18-minus program. They wake up at 3:30 in the morning. They have to wake up, I mean, according to the program, they have to wake up at 4. But they're very courageous. They wake up at 3:30 in the morning and then go to Elimalua, or they go to the Buddhaguna Sajjana, or they go to the Arya Maitreya, and then they come down at 4. So think about their courage. So courage is something that you need to attain Nibbana. If you can remember, or if you have heard, that when Venerable Moggallana, before him attaining Nibbana, he was falling asleep in his meditation. And then the Lord Buddha saw this, and then he went to Venerable Moggallana and then said different ways to try out, different things to try out for him to overcome sleep. So he did that, and to do that he needs courage. Maybe what Lord Buddha saw was that his faculty of courage is not improving. It hasn't improved. So that could be what Lord Buddha saw at that time. And then he went to the great elder Moggallana and then said, gave advice. And then he took that advice, and then therefore we have the great elder Moggallana. He developed his courage. So you are very courageous people. Well done for that. Appreciate that. Because it is something that you need to develop. Step by step, little steps that you have to take. All of these 5. It is said that Nibbana starts with giving. Right? So it could be hard to give something, let's say very big stuff. But you can start simply by giving a very small thing. For example, offering a glass of water to the Lord Buddha. That's also giving. You can do that every day. That's a small step. Although they might seem like small steps, they're not small steps. They're not small steps. It is said that one small step for a man, it's a giant leap for the mankind. So one small step for you in the morning, waking up from the bed on a cold day. One small step for you. It might seem like, just today. I can stay just today. I can say something. I can give an excuse. Just today. But if you took that small step, although it might seem like a small step, one small step for you, it's a giant leap on your path of Nibbana. It was suggested by Sir Neil Armstrong when he first stepped on the moon. It was just one small step for him. But if you take the bigger scale, landing on the moon was a big leap for the mankind. It was a huge development for the mankind. So just like that, it might be a small step for you to go and offer a glass of water to the Lord Buddha every morning. It's a small step. You just have to put some water into a glass and then offer it. And then worship and then do your work. Small step. Seteruan sarna, which you always do. A small step. But when you take the scale of Nibbana, then it's a giant leap. So all of your small steps have been combined into big giant leaps. Many, many, many giant leaps. And then you have actually, so I have heard of a story where, so, and this is, I don't know whether this is true or not, but in the Hinduism or something, I can't remember exactly where the story comes from, but if you have heard of the character called Hanumanta, yeah, so I think it's a god. I think it's a god. So, when he came to Sri Lanka, he kept one step in India, and then the other step in Sri Lanka. So that's what it said. So that means he just kept giant steps. But if we were to walk from Sri Lanka to India or India to Sri Lanka, then we would just keep small steps. But for Hanumanta, it was just two steps into Sri Lanka. Just like that, although it might seem like small steps for you, you're actually keeping bigger, larger, great leaps you're going on your path to Nibbana. So don't ever underestimate a small step. Don't ever underestimate that it's just a small merit. It's just very small. Don't ever underestimate that. I mean, you don't, but never. So always keep that in your mind. Because small steps are what matters all the time. Very small things. Small changes in your life. These are the things that will make a bigger change in your life. 100 small changes equals a big change. 100 ones equals 100. But if you just write one on your book today, and then tomorrow, another one, day after, another one, and then go on, skip for a week, and then you have 7. 2 weeks, you have 14. 3 weeks, you have 21. But every day you wrote 1. So Guru Handra recently asked us to write, so to check our consistency. He told us that just don't do anything. Just check whether you have consistency or you're consistent in your task. Just take a notebook and then start writing Budhu Sarana in that to fill up that notebook. Whether you can do that every single day. Just fill an 80-page book with Budhu Sarana. Oh, that's all you have to do. Take a book and, I mean, you don't need a new book. You can use an old book. And every day, to fill a page or a line, you have to write Buddha Sarana. So you write a whole line of Buddha Sarana, and then Buddha Sarana, and Buddha Sarana, and Buddha Sarana, and Buddha Sarana. Every single day you do that. So today you write one line, the next day you write another line, the next day you write another line. Not to fill up the book in one day. That is not the task. The task is to do a small line of Buddha Sarana every day. Or a page of Buddha Sarana every day. Just like the rain. When it happens every day, it's very dangerous. So when you're attacking your defilements every day, then it's very dangerous for the defilements. It's time to say goodbye. So something that happens every day, it's very important. And that needs courage. That needs concentration. So all of these things, you can't actually say that this is one thing that I'm trying to develop. You can't say that. But you might see people who are very courageous. You might see people who are very aware of things around them. You might see people who are very concentrated on a task when they are given. You might see people very wise, taking wise decisions, taking wise actions. You might see people who are very faithful. So you can actually sort of come to, you can actually guess that this person might be stronger in this spiritual faculty, but it can be true and it might not be true, but I mean, you can actually come to a guess, because you might see people who are very faithful, courageous, aware, and who concentrates on their tasks and very wise. You might see people, different people like that. But all people, all minds have these five. In different amounts. But what you have to do is you have to develop these five up to a certain point, and that development is called your path to Nibbana. That is another way of interpreting the path to Nibbana. If you give another way, and that is the 10 perfections. That is another way of interpreting your path to Nibbana. So there are many different ways of interpreting your path to Nibbana. Just like your progress in something. Just like your progress in the school. You can look at your record book. Or you can check how much this person has understood by giving a test. That goes into the record book. Or you can ask that person questions and then check their memory. So there are different ways of interpreting your skills. These are your skills of path to Nibbana. This is just one way of that. And what I wanted to mention is that you're very courageous. So well done. And what courage helps us to do is, because you need a very clean and clear and a very strong character to attain Nibbana. What Guru Handra always says is that you have to be proud of yourself before getting rid of yourself. Before understanding about that the self itself it's an illusion, before understanding that, you need to be very proud of yourself. You need to have a very clean and a very strong character. That is what Guru Handra always says. When you look back at your past, when you look back into your life, you should be able to rejoice in that. You should be able to impress yourself whenever you look at your past. Not to impress anyone else. Just see whether you can impress yourself today compared to yesterday. Are you impressed? When you compare yourself today to yesterday, to the last week, to the last month, are you impressed about yourself? Are you impressed about your conduct? Are you impressed about how you do things? Are you impressed about how you think about things? Are you impressed about how you speak to people and speak about things? Basically, are you impressed about your thoughts, words, and actions? Compared to yesterday, compared to last week, compared to last month. If you're impressed, then that's good. That's great. That's marvelous. That is what you need. Because then you can rejoice in that impress. Your impressiveness. You can rejoice in that. You can be very impressed about yourself. And then you can rejoice in that. And that rejoice, when you rejoice in that, that happiness itself will help you think about yourself in a very confident way. because that confidence is needed. I mean, just think about it. Anything, for you to do anything, you need confidence, right? If you're not confident about anything, then you try to back up in those instances. For example, let's say you're given to do a speech in front of an audience. So these are the classical examples that you come across in your life, and maybe in the school, maybe at work, maybe when doing something, when you're in social gatherings, you're given to do a speech. If you're not confident to do that, then you try to back yourself up out of it. You try to take yourself out of it. You try to give it to someone else. And just think about winning something. Just think about an exam. Most people, what do they do? when they're close to an exam, that's when they start to study. When there's like 1 or 2 weeks for the exam, I need to look through, I need to go through the books. I need to check what I have to do. I need to check that what syllabus that I'm covering. Most people are like that when they have an exam. They start to study just 1 or 2 weeks before the exam or 1 or 2 months before the exam. Therefore, even on the last day, you're up at night, burning midnight oil, drinking coffee. You're up at night, but maybe that effort might not be very effective. But if you're doing a small thing, let's say from the start of the year, a very small thing, you just looked at the lesson. And you looked at your lesson beforehand, before the lesson starts. You look at it. So, for example, today, you learned about Unit 1. And then today the teacher is going to teach you about Unit 2. And you look at Unit 2 and then check with yourself. Are you familiar with these concepts? And then when you go to the school, the teacher will be teaching Unit 2 and you will be familiar with that. So therefore, it's the second time that you're learning that. So all the things that were in your head, all the questions that came to you when you looked at Unit 2 beforehand, before the exam, then your questions are answered by the teacher when she or he is teaching the lesson. That is a good student. That is the same thing Guru Hamguru asks us to do. He gives a sermon, he preaches a sermon, and then he asks us to think on those lines. When you think on those lines, you come up with questions. So you apply it to your life, and then when you're in the lab of life, you're applying it, you're applying the concepts, and when you're doing all of that, then you come up with different questions. What is this? If this is like this, what about this? Then in the next sermon, you don't actually have to ask those questions. Your questions are answered. That is how it is. So that's how a good student is all the time. So without burning the midnight oil, you can always practice throughout your day, throughout your life, because this is a way of living. Nibbana is not an exam. It is not something that you have to answer with the knowledge that you have when problems come. It is a way of life. Nibbana is a way of life. So what do you do in the school, in academic learning? You learn and then you do the exam. So you have all the things that you have learned in your knowledge, and then you just go and drop them on the paper. That is academic learning. So if I ask you the things that you have learned in your school life, you can't remember. That is how it was. That is academic learning, because sometimes you remember this, you remember stuff, but let's say you have done maths or biology. If I ask you a concept, then you have to go and look it up, because you're not using it now. So you'll have to go and look it up to give an exact answer. But apart from that, Nibbana is not an exam. In an exam, you learn things in the class, and then you study, you memorize, you put that into your head, and then when the exam comes, you go and drop all the things that is in your head onto the paper. I can remember when I was little, when I was doing exams, just before the exam, so if it's like, let's say, a maths paper or a science paper, just before the exam, I look at the book. So I study, but then just before the exam, let's say 5 minutes before the exam, I look at the book, and then let's say the things that I couldn't memorize, those are the things that I focus on. So I look at the book and then try to put into my head the blocks of stuff. So let's say formulas. I keep them in my head and then keep repeating it without talking to anyone until the paper is given out. As soon as the paper is given out, I write them all on the paper. Maybe those questions don't even come in the paper, but as a backup. So I just keep them in the head. So they're not actually in the head, right? They are just repeated during that small time. So when the teacher says, okay, books away, and then you put the textbooks away and the notebooks away, and then you put the bags. But when I'm doing that, when I used to do that, so I repeat all the things that I looked at in my head. And then the papers are handed out. As soon as I get the paper, you just write them on the paper. All the things that is in your head. And then it's a huge relief. And then when you're doing the paper, you refer to the things that you have written. It's not cheating, right? Because you didn't copy during the exam. It's just that it was in your head, and then you wrote it down on the paper. So the children don't do this, okay? But that is how you do an exam. That is not how you do an exam properly, but that is how you do an exam. So you just need to remember stuff, and then sometimes you need to understand stuff. For example, like biology, you need to understand the concepts for you to answer the questions. But again, it's sort of like memorizing and then answering the questions in the paper. And then that's it. That's over. You don't have to live with all the things that you have learned. You learn, memorize, study, and put all the things on the paper, write all the things on the paper, and then the exam's over. And then you wipe your hands. I don't need to remember all of this. And then you take your books out, and then either give it to someone or then put them in the bin very happily. So all the writing books, sometimes you give it to some people. So for someone who's doing the exam again, you give it to them. But you're doing that very happily. You discard them from your life. So even giving it to someone is just taking them out of your life, right? You don't need them anymore. Unless you're teaching, unless you're planning to teach. So you just discard them from your life. And that's all. That's it. The exam's finished. And you don't need to worry about that anymore. But Nibbana is not like that. This could be one reason why Guru Hanuman says that it could be really hard for the academic learners to attain Nibbana. Sometimes Guru Hanuman says that. This could be one reason why, because we are so used to doing this from grade one. We were given exams. We were taught, and then at the end of the lesson, we have exercises. So what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to learn through the lesson, and then at the end of the lesson, we're supposed to answer the questions in the exercise. And then that lesson is over. And then you need that lesson again when the exams are close. And then you don't turn to that page again. And then comes the second unit. And then you learn through that again the next day. And then at the end of the lesson, you have exercises. You do the exercises and then finished. And then the third lesson, fourth lesson, and so on and so forth. That's what you, that is what we are used to do. And then after that, after 3 months, we have the term tests. Then we do the term tests and then that is over again. And then we need the things that we learned in the first term only in the year-end exam. When it comes to the year-end exam, then we just go through the stuff that we have learned in the first term, second term, and then answer the questions in the third term test. And then that year is over. Apart from maths, science, and those subjects which actually develop on the knowledge that you have from previous years, some subjects like, I don't know, there are some subjects that you actually don't need like to develop from previous years. You can actually hang on to them from the next year. Apart from those subjects, you actually don't need the stuff that you have learned in the previous year. I mean, they're very valuable, but sometimes you don't need them in your life. So when we are so accustomed to this tradition of learning, this way and the method of learning, when we are so accustomed to this, and all we do is we are used to learning something and then answering questions. That is what we are learned from grade 1 up to A levels, and then after A levels in your graduation studies. So this is what we learn. So Nibbana is not like that. When you listen to a sermon, then the next is not answering questions. The next is living with what you learned. Those are two different things. Living with what you learned and answering questions are two different things. Living with what you learned is that you apply the things that you have learned and you live with that application. Not apply from time to time. So when times come, it is this thing. So it is anicca and dukkha and anatta. So it's not really a problem, right? And then you skip over it. When a problem comes. That is good to start on your journey on the path, but when you progress on the path, that is not the way to do it. Nibbana is a way of living. It's a lifestyle. That's why the noble friend is very important. Because noble friends always keep you contained in that lifestyle. Always keep you on that track. They always help you to put yourself on the track. That is what noble friends do. They help you keep, they help you live in that lifestyle. So for example, let's say you move into a different country or a different region. When you do that, then you're not accustomed to whatever that goes around that place. You have to learn the things that goes around. And to live according to that culture. You're not acculturated as soon as you move into that place, that region, that society. So as soon as you move in, you don't know the things that is going on. You don't know the right and the wrong things that are in convention in that place, in that society, in that culture. So you have to learn from scratch. You have to learn from scratch how you have to eat even. So for example, in Sri Lanka, we eat using hands. But if you move to the UK, and it's rarely you eat with your hands. You use the knife and the fork and the spoon. So you don't mix rice with your hand. And it might seem like disgusting as well. If someone sees you doing that, then they might feel that it's very disgusting. So when you, you have to adjust yourself according to that culture, right? You have to acculturate yourself. You have to acclimatize yourself into that culture. You have to acculturate yourself into that. So you have to adjust yourself according to what goes around. So Nibbana, so then you live like that. You live your life according to that culture. Nibbana is just like that. When you listen to a sermon, you adjust yourself according to what you learned. You adjust your mentality according to what you've learned. That happens by learning as well. But then your task after learning is adjusting yourself according to that, not answering questions. Because Guru Andhra doesn't give you an exercise paper with all sorts of exercises at the end of the sermon, right? He doesn't do that. So answer these questions at the end of the sermon. Has he ever done that? No. Has Nayakandra ever done that? No. Has anyone ever done that? No. But they used to do that at the Dhamma school. So therefore, even in the Dhamma school, we learned that when you learn the Dhamma, you have to answer questions. When you went to the Dhamma school. So when you learn something in the Dhamma, then okay, again, what you have to do is answer the questions. So I can remember recently that, so we get to talk to the children at the Rajagiriya sermon. So recently they asked, Swaminathan sir, aren't you giving us an exam? So they are so accustomed to it. These are children who are just in like the age of 9, 10, very small children. 9, 10 is like grade 4, 5 and 6. So even at that age, they are so accustomed to learning something and answering questions. What do you think when they grow up? So even at such a small age, they are so used to it. So when they learn something, they want an exam. So then I told them that the exam is your life. So whatever you learnt in this, next week when you come, if there's an improvement in your life, that is your exam. If there's an improvement in your life, you have passed the exam. So I have asked them to write a merits book. So in that merits book, they write all the merits that they do and the good things that they do and the dumb points that they can remember. So that is the improvement. So it is not about exams. It is not about writing answers to questions in life. It is not about that. It is always about how you live with what you learn. That is what Nibbana is. Nibbana is a way of living. But that living and how you understand something could differ. That is very normal. Your understanding of, let's say, today you listen to a sermon, you understand a certain amount. If you listen to the same sermon 1 year after that, you understand something deeper, something more than what you understand today. How come? Was it in the sermon? So just think about it. All the Swaminathas in the monastery and all the devotees, the Anagarika Mahatmyas, the Anagarika Mahatyas, they all listen to the same sermon of Guru Andhra. Saturday sermon. They all listen to the same sermon. But each of them understand differently. According to how fluent their practice is, according to how strong their practice is, according to whether they were awake in the sermon or not. All of these things come together and then affect in your understanding. All of these comes together. So, according to how they practice the path, according to what faculty of their spiritual faculty is strong. If you ask two people to write Dhamma points, then you'd see that how different points that they catch from the sermon. Sometimes one point might be in both the books. But sometimes few points are in one book, but those points are not in the other book. It depends on how you think during the sermon. It depends on how your mentality is. It depends on how your lifestyle is. Because according to the problems that you have, you pick up the points, right? From the sermon. So it's like throwing hats around. You pick up the right hat and put it on your head. So that is what a sermon is. You always throw hats around the place, and then at the end of the day, you think, oh, that's a good point. That's a good hat. It fits me. When you go to a shop, you don't buy all the clothes in it. You pick the right ones. But in the shop, there are many clothes. From dresses to frocks to t-shirts to all the things are there. Hats, shoes. But you don't pick all of them and then buy the whole shop. Unless you want to resell, but you don't do that personally, for yourself. You pick the right one that fits, you pick the right color that you want, and then you buy that. Just like that, the sermon throws out all sorts of types, all types of different clothes, all of those, shoes, careful, you might get hit from some. So it throws all of them at you. And then you have to pick the right ones and then put it on your head. Put it on you. There's a very strong advice that was given to us recently, and that is, sometimes you might feel that I get different advice. I mean, you get different advice and from different people. What should you do? Which one should I actually pick and start doing? So, if you take a sermon, so Guru Hamdu says to do this, Nayak Hamdu says to do this, some other Swaminhansi says to do this, and ... So someone might say to offer a glass of water. Someone might say to offer a bucket of flowers to the Lord Buddha every day. So should I offer a glass of water or a bucket of flowers or both? Which one should I do? So you might come into a conflict inside your head like that. Which one do I have to actually do to attain Nibbana? So someone else might say that offer a joss stick or an incense stick to the Lord Buddha every day. Someone else might say chant Buddhaguna every single day. Another Swaminathan might say, do the Arimaitri every single day. And then given that, you can't do all of these things on the same day. Sometimes you can, but let's say you can't. There are many advice that have been given to you, and you can't do all of them. You're bombarded with advice because it is your merits. Because of your merits, you get advice every day. Just think about Venerable Rahul Maharatan, he got advice every day, and that is what he expected. That is what he wanted. He threw up a handful of sand and said, "May I receive advice for every single grain of sand that is in my hand?" So, can you imagine what Venerable Rahula had been like for him to receive lots of advice? I mean, he is known as the most docile monk, one of the most docile monks. But before he became the docile monk, so he was just 7 years old. So he would have spent a life of just a 7-year-old child running around playing. But then he became the most docile monk because of the advice that was given to him. So many advice had been given to him, and therefore he took all of them in, and then he tried to perfect himself according to the advice that he got. So therefore, the advice that you get, you have to bear it like this. All the teachers around you, all the noble friends, you might get advice from the people around you as well, your noble friends, your associates, your friends, you might get advice from them as well. So when you get advice, what you should do is, you should bear all the people who give advice are just like flower trees. What do flower trees do? They give out flowers. And let's say there's a cherry blossom tree. And there's a... what other flowers are there? Tulips. Can you name another flower? Roses, thank you. Lily. So let's say there are different flower trees, like roses, tulips, cherry blossoms, and lilies. So you have different sorts of flower trees. So each flower tree likes to see their flowers on you, don't they? If the flower tree can live, if the flower tree is alive, they would like to see their flowers on you, right? So if I'm a tulip tree or a tulip plant, if I'm a tulip plant, I would like to see a tulip flower on you. Because then I feel like you're wearing my flowers. If I'm a rose tree, I would like to see roses on you. If you're wearing a garland of flowers, I would like to see roses in that. If I'm a cherry blossom tree, I would like to see cherry blossoms in people, in their garlands. So therefore, when you come near me, I would give you cherry blossoms. If I'm a cherry blossom tree. And then tell you to, you should wear this. It would look nice on you. And when you go to the rose tree, when you go near the rose tree, then the rose tree, what does the rose tree do? It gives you the rose flower and tells you that, wear this. It would look really marvelous on you. It would look really pretty on you. And then the rose tree will give you the rose flower. When you go near the lily tree, lily plant, when you go near the lily plant, it will give you the lily flower and then tell you that, wear this. It will look really nice on you. You will look beautiful after that. Because every single tree individually likes to see their flowers on your garland. They like to see their flowers on others' garlands. So the advice is, you'll get different flowers from different trees. So the trees are like the people who give you advice in life. So they would always like to see their advice. You're doing their advice. They would always like to see their flowers on your garland. But can you put all the flowers in one garland? What would that garland look like after that? Imagine, so there are roses in, I think these are roses. So there are roses in this bouquet. Let's say you put cherry blossoms in this, and then bandura in this, and then all sorts of different flowers, pitcher, jasmine, and vatusudha, and lily, all sorts of flowers in this. What would this look like? Would this be a good sight, a good decoration, or would you call it a bad decoration? It wouldn't be up to the standard, right? It wouldn't be up to the standard of a good decoration. It wouldn't look pretty. So for it to look pretty, it needs a certain configuration of flowers. So the person who decorated this knows exactly what that configuration is. When they know the exact arrangement of flowers that you need to put, the exact arrangement of these leaves that you need to put in order to get the site a good look on the view of the camera. So they know that. That is what they have learned. So, just like that, you have to take all the flowers. Because if you reject them from the tree, then the tree might think that he's not willing to take my flowers, so I would just rather not give flowers to them again. But their flowers are valuable. Maybe not today, but on another day. It might be their flower that keeps you on the track to Nibbana. Not today, but on another day. But who knows? So therefore, their flower is very valuable, but if you reject it, they might not give flowers again, because they might think that, there's no point in giving the flowers, because they keep rejecting it. But what you ought to do is, you should accept it. You should take the flowers from that tree, and then from all the trees you should take all the flowers that you get, because it is your merits, so you have to reap them. The merits that you do come in different guises. So when you go towards the tree, it will give you flowers, and then you take the flowers from the tree. You take them, and then where do you take them to? You should take them to your teacher, your personal teacher. Or a person that you really trust. A person who gives advice in your life. It could be your mother, it could be your father. It could be your personal teacher, your spiritual teacher. It could be a Swaminhanse. It could be another Anagarika Mahatmya. It could be another Anagarika Mahatya. Whoever you trust, and whoever gives advice to you, you should take them to them, and then ask them. And this person should know you personally and what you're going through right now.
Excuse me.
What you're going through right now in life. What you're practicing and what is your understanding, what is your level of understanding. They should have an approximate value of that. Not value, but an approximate assumption of that. So then you take all the flowers to them, and then you put down all your flowers. Teacher, these are the flowers that I got. I got these flowers from this tree. I got these flowers from this tree. I got the tulip from the tulip plant. I got these flowers from this tree. And then you show where you got the flowers from. And then you tell your teacher, teacher, you make my garland. Because the teacher is the one who has the knowledge. He is the one who does the decoration. Let him do it. Because otherwise, your decoration might be a mess. Your garland might be a mess. Could be a mess. So let the teacher do it. Let the person who you trust do it. Let the person who knows you a lot do it. And then he'll tell you that, you don't need this flower anymore. You can keep it, you can throw it away. This flower, you can return it to the tree that you got it from. You can give it back to the tree. This flower, this should go on your garland. This is the exact right flower to go on your garland. This is one of the flowers to go on your garland. This flower, I'll keep it with me. You might need it in the future. This flower, you can keep it with you. Use this flower whenever you need it. So they look at all the flowers that you have and then throw some things out and then tell you to return some flowers to the tree that you got it from and then keep some for the teacher to give it to you when you need it and give some flowers to you to use them when you feel like you need it, you need them. That is what a great person who does decoration does. They pluck the flower at the exact point that it is needed to make the decoration very beautiful, to make it a spectacle. That's what they do. So that is what your teachers have done. That is what your teachers will be doing. And this is great advice that you will need when you get different advice from lots of people, because there are lots of people here in the monastery, if you take it, and in the society as well, you'll get different advice. So when you get them, always keep in your mind that all of those are flowers that you get from different people. All of those are flowers. You should collect all the flowers. You shouldn't reject them. You should collect all the flowers and then go and tell your teacher. Go and tell the person that you trust the most. Go and tell the person that you take advice from. And then tell them, these are the flowers that I got and which one should I wear? Ask them which one should I wear. And then they'll make the best decoration. They'll make the best garland that suits you in the current time frame. That suits you for now. And then go back to them after some time and then ask them, is this the garland that I should be wearing? Should I change it? And then they'll tell you, oh, I have some flowers that you gave early. Let's put them on your garland. And then they'll remove some of the flowers from your garland and say that, yeah, you no longer need this. Take it out. Now that is a teacher. He always knows what you need to do. He or she always knows what you need to do. And then decorate you all the time with the flowers that you bring to them. And he is also a tree. He might put some of his flowers on your garland as well. That is up to him. That is up to them. That is up to your teachers. So, why I say this is because sometimes we may find it hard to understand what is actually meant by a teacher or someone. Because it is like that. Even if you take an organization, even if you take an office, even if you are at work, even if you are at the school, the most hardest thing, the hardest thing in this world is communication. One of the hardest things. Communication, there are many communication errors that goes on. So there's a story that I've heard. I can't remember exactly where this story was applied, but it said that there's a letter goes to a person who has kept someone in prison, and this is a communication error of a comma. It said, in Sinhalese, it said, "Maranne epa nidahas karan." So, this person forgot to put the comma. What he actually meant was, "Maranne epa nidahas karan." But what the people in the prison thought was, "Maranne." So they put the comma wherever they wanted and then kill this person. So in English it's meant as but don't release. Oh, kill, don't release this person. So that's just one sentence, right? But according to where you put the comma, it differs. the meaning of it differs. Oh, well. The meaning of it differs according to where you put the comma. Oh, don't kill, but release. So it doesn't come in English. Sorry? Ah, yes, thank you. Thank you very much. Kill him, not save him. Okay. So, according to where you put the comma, let's say, kill him, not, save him. So, if you put the comma at the end of not, then you save the person. If you put the comma at the end of kill him, then you kill the person. So, if you write a letter to the prison saying that, kill him, not save him, the whole sentence, then the prisoners put the comma wherever they want and kill the person. Or it's not that prisoners are bad, but the jailers, thank you very much. The jailers put the comma wherever they interpret the message to be like. So that's why when you understand the Dhamma a lot, when you understand, when you progress on the path, your understanding differs, your understanding increases, your understanding improves, it develops. Therefore, when you listen to the same sermon after 1 year of practicing the path, you'll get more out of the same sermon than you got it on the first time that you listened to it. The reason is, you don't understand the sermon that Guru Ramadas gives you. Anyone gives you, you don't understand whatever they are saying. You don't understand what I'm saying right now. This is not offending you, but seriously, you don't. You're not understanding what I'm saying, what I'm telling you right now. You might think that, I understand what you're saying right now. No, you don't. The reason is, understanding does not happen between you and me. Communication does not happen between you and me. Relationships don't happen between you and me. I'm not saying something to you for you to understand. I'm saying something, you understand something. That is how this world is. That is why there are communication errors. Because I can't give something to you to understand. Even so, we tend to feel that we understand the person in front of us. When they're talking, we are listening to them. So we are listening to them, right? So we are listening to them, we are listening to their words. How can I not understand? If you're talking to me, how can I not understand what you're saying? So given that point, because people, so this is a side note, so because people can't understand this language, Sinhalese, so the Swaminathans at the monastery and the Anagarika Mahatmyas, they have very compassionately developed a program where they have started preaching in 25 languages, which will be releasing, so there would be an event to release those YouTube channels on the 30th of November, so tomorrow. Just think how compassionate they are. Always going the extra mile. They came here to attend Nibbana, but not to learn a language. But today they learn a language to help all of you understand it. To help all the people, all sentient beings understand it. They even go as far as learning a sign language. Sign language, just think about it. Not just language that you speak words out. Not just that. But even sign language. How marvelous it is. So just think of how far a person is willing to go when they're actually starting to learn that, when they're starting to actually become selfless. This is selfless service, as I say it. Because people talk about selflessness, but you do selflessness. You're in the process of actually losing the self. You're actually doing it. So in your thoughts, words, and actions, you show selflessness to this world. So that's a side note, and there will be, I think, 20 channels of 25 languages releasing, including sign language, and you can rejoice in these merits. Let's say one person listen to one of those sermons, and they start doing a small thing, a small change in life. It might not be that they will come to the monastery and they'll start listening to the Dhamma and all that, but they'll start, let's say there's a person who kills animals and he stops killing animals because he listened to this one of these sermons. That might seem like a very small thing, but it's a great leap. It's a great leap in his path to Nibbana. But he might continue to steal. Who knows? But he stopped killing. That is what he heard first. And then he keeps on listening. And then he stops stealing as well. That's another small step, but a great leap. So that'll help them to someday attain Nibbana. It happened to us, ladies and gentlemen. It happened to us many lives ago, maybe. Someone did like this back then. Someone thought of all sentient beings and did something like this back then. And therefore, we don't know where we were. But somehow we got to listen to some small thing and then we changed our life according to that small thing. And therefore, we earned enough merits to be born in the land of the in a land where the Buddhist teaching prevails. So someone did that for us. That's why we are here today. Okay, so what I wanted to try to explain is that communication, language and communication and everything that we do, it does not happen this way. It does not happen between two people. It does not happen between you and me. It is not a transaction that takes place between two people. It is not a transaction that takes place with people. Although we feel it like that. Although you feel that the Swaminathan is speaking right now and I understand what he's speaking. I understand his words. But not so. You don't understand me. What? Duh, Swaminas, I understand you. You don't understand anyone in this world. Huh? When you learned first at the school, in the first grade, when you learned A, you didn't understand what the teacher was saying. When you go to the school and learn a lesson from the school, you don't understand that from the teacher. Ah, that could be true, Swaminathan. The teachers, I don't know what they mean. No, it's not that. It's that you have never understood what someone else had said. Because you can never understand what someone else says. It is a transaction that happens between you and your strand of karma. Your knowledge, your memories. It is a transaction that happens with that all the time. So we called it the So in the school, what do you have to record your progress of exams and scores and your marks? What do you have at the school? The student record book. We call it the karma record book. So in the school, you have the SRB, the student record book, but we call this the karma record book. This is your record book of karma. It has all the things that you have done. The things that you have done secretly, without telling anyone. The secrets that only you know. It has all the things that you have done. The greatest secrets in your life. You thought that only you know them, right? The whole universe knows it. Not all the people in the universe, but the universe knows it. Because it goes into your karma record book. All the bad things that you have done, all the good things that you have done, all the things that you do, every single breath you take, every single karma that you do, it goes into the karma record book. It is always up there. And then there are memories. And there are memories. So I'm not actually inventing another model for interpretation. Or so there are models in psychology about how memories and how memory works. I can't remember them now. So I think one is called the visio-spatial sketchpad or something. Is there anyone who does psychology? No. Okay. Yes. So this is how basically you understand something. When someone is talking to you, this is you. When you're talking with someone else, we tend to feel that we have a transaction like this. That is what we tend to feel. We feel that we are actually dealing with the person in front of us. So I am talking and you understand. Do you understand what I'm saying? So I'm talking and this person understands. This is what we tend to feel. But this is not what actually happens behind the scene. How understanding happens is that when you speak, this mind, so minds arise in this body. When minds arise in that body, it goes into the memories and then checks according to the mental base, according to the thoughts that arose, it goes into the memory and checks whether there are things related to that. Whether there are things that is related to what I just heard. The sound waves that you got are interpreted in according to your memories, according to what you have in your memories. And then your karma also, your karma is what the vipaka that is stored in your karma record book is what actually gives rise to the mind. When it gives rise to the mind, so although we talk about just one single mind here, so for you to understand something is not just a single mind, is it? Millions of minds arise and pass away. And then there is a feature in the mind, a quality in the mind, where it is an option in the mind. So the mind can actually aggregate or amalgamate or culminate the process or the thoughts that arose into just one single perception. That is the ability of vijnana. That is the ability to perceive. That is what you call perceiving. It has the ability to perceive. To perceive even the perceptions that took place in every single instant. It has the ability to perceive them together. So therefore, many minds arise. When someone's talking in front of you, many minds arise, and then it reaches your memory and then takes things back from your memory, and then again another mind arises, and then it goes to your memories, and according to what they're saying, according to what that mind was arisen with, it goes to the memory and then checks it with the memory and then comes back. So not that a mind goes to the memory and then comes back. It's not like that, but the process of the mind is running, the memories, according to that environment, the memory gets into that process as well. And then finally, a perception is made. That perception is what you call, you understood it. So, did it come from this person? But he was the one who was speaking. But it didn't come from them. It all happened here. It all happened in this mind. That's why when this person is speaking, if there are two people, they would understand two things. They would not understand the same thing. So I said about the visual spatial sketchpad. What did you understand? What is that? You understood? Maybe you understood it something like something visual and then spatial, the word is there. So something that you hear and then a sketchpad? Where does a sketchpad come from? And then a notebook with a pen. So anyhow, so that means everything happens in this mind. All the memories are accessed according to what this mind interprets. The memories in this mind are only accessed from this mind. Because the memories in this mind cannot be ever accessed by this mind. Well, it can if this mind becomes the Buddha. Because the Buddha can access your memories as well. Good thing the Buddha is not around here. So, a Lord Buddha can access your memories as well. But for your mind, only you can access your memories. So, when someone is talking to you, so that's why when I said the visual spatial sketchpad, in your memory, the word visual was there, spatial was there, sketchpad was there. So then you put those things together and then made something up. But if the real visual spatial sketchpad, the model in psychology, if it was in your head, maybe Peter Mathe had it, if it was in your head, then you might have come up with that model. Yeah? You might have come up with that model. But if you didn't have that in your memory, then you came up with something else. But what I meant was that model. But what did you come up with? Something else. Even if you knew the model, maybe I can't remember it completely today. So I meant a different model, thinking that it is the visual spatial sketchpad. But maybe you remember it today. So therefore, you remember the right model. I'm talking about the wrong model. So even there, are you getting what I'm actually trying to say? No. Again, you're accessing your own memories and then interpreting whatever you're hearing right now according to your memories. Because again, hearing is also interpreted inside your mind. So you can't say that you're hearing what I'm saying. That is also interpreted in your mind. So the words that you hear, because you don't hear words, you hear, although I say words, the ear can only take in vibrations. The ear can only take in vibrations. According to those vibrations, an electrical impulse goes to the brain. From the brain, a message is sent to the mind. Let's just call it a message for now. From the brain, a message is sent to the mind. And then that message is what the mind interprets. And that's why communication is full of errors. Because I'm trying to convey something through a language, and therefore the feeling that I have drops by, let's say, 60% when it's converted into a language. So the stronger the vocabulary that I have, I'll be able to precisely say the feeling that I have. The more the vocabulary that I have, I'll be able to be more accurate. But still, it's not 100% accurate. So the feeling drops when it comes to language, and when it goes into your mind, then everything is according to your memories. Everything is according to what you have learned, what you know about that thing, what you know about that situation. But this person, so then you might come up with the question, so doesn't this person do anything else, anything in your understanding? He does. He creates that environment. That is all he does. He creates the environment for this to happen. He creates the environment for that to happen. So if this is an Arita Mahanse, this is not there. Because karma does not happen. But this is there. So he will always be creating an environment. That is what happens. That is why being in the Noble Association is very important. It's not because this is taking place. It's not because you're dealing with noble people. It is not that. It is because when you're in the Noble Association, there is the environment for all the good things. Let's say this is good and bad that you've done in your karma record book. So all the good things will come through this this noble environment. All the good things will happen in the noble environment. Because the environment is noble. And therefore, that environment will only attract good. But you might see people sometimes, people start thinking that, let's say there's a very rich person in the country. Sometimes people say that this person does all the bad things and not good to this world, and he earns money out of it. He's very rich because of that. And then you might see another person. Maybe this has happened to you. Sometimes you might start feeling that, Swaminas, I do all these good things, but these days are very bad for me. I'm going through a very hard. I'm going through a very hard week. I'm going through a very hard month. All the things that happens to me is very bad. Very unfavorable situations come to my life these days. But I keep on doing the Buddha Puja, I keep on offering flowers to the Lord Buddha, I keep on doing all these good things. But these days, life is miserable. Sometimes you might have gone through this experience. Life is miserable, but you keep doing good things. Sometimes you might have seen people like that. They keep on doing all the good things to the world, but their life is miserable. I mean, that even happened to the chief benefactor of the Sambhujasasana. It even happened to him. There came a day where he lost all of his money for something. And then he had to live with just a chili curry or something like that for a few days. But even in those days, he gave. But a person might see that situation as he gave a lot to the Sambhujasasana and then he lost. He helped the monks a lot and then he lost, but not so. Because people always tend to see things in this way. And that is why, think about it, our ancestors in the past, the Sihela ancestors, they were very intelligent. They were very wise. Because they associated wise people. They associated the Arithunwanses. They were very wise. Therefore, they were sharing goods with each other. So when you are sharing something with someone, so you give something to someone and then they give you something to you in return. So when you're actually doing that, do you do that thinking, I shouldn't be giving this much to this person? When you're actually giving something, let's say you grow some vegetable in your garden. And then they also grow something. Let's say they do a paddy field. And they give you rice. In exchange, you give them ladies fingers. Or whatever that you grow. You give them something that you grow in your garden. You give them brinjal. You give them eggplant. You give them whatever that you grow in your garden. In exchange for the rice that they give you. Do you feel like I shouldn't be given this much? Or are you happy about you giving that to them? You're always happy about it. But then, so there's a story that goes, there was a head monk of a monastery, and this monk, so he was the Nayaka Hamdur of this monk, he was the chief abbot. So when he started going on Pindapatha, so before he starts going on Pindapatha, he would lift his arms ball to the air. And they look inside that arms ball. And then start proceeding on Pindapatha. And this was seen by the other Swaminarayanas at the monastery, his students. This was seen by them, and then they also thought this might be a blessing or something that he asked for, or a prayer that he does. And they didn't ask why he's doing it. They just saw it and they start doing it as well. So when they became the chief abbot, they became the head of the monastery, because this became a custom that is done by the head of the monastery. When few generations passed, because they didn't ask why he did that. So when few generations passed, this became a custom that the head of the monastery does before going on alms round. And then their students did that. And then now the current generation, before going on alms round, lift their arms ball to the air. So the head of the monastery, only he does that. He lifts his arms ball in the air and then proceed on the alms round. But actually, the story behind that is, the very first Swaminarayan who did that, the very chief Nayaka Hamdru, or the very chief abbot, the head of the monastery, who did that at first, he had a hole in his arms bowl. So to check that hole, where it is, he lifted his arms bowl to the air. So when there's the sun, the light comes through that hole, and then you can spot the hole when you look into the arms bowl. And then he keeps his finger there, because otherwise all the curry or whatever you get from the Pindapatha just drips down that hole, right? So you don't want that. You don't want curry dripping down your robe. So therefore he keeps his finger there and then proceed on the arms round. That's why he looked up to the he lifted his arms ball into the air and then looked up and then put his finger and then proceeded on the arms run. But then all the Swaminathans who were watching this thought that this is a tradition. They didn't ask why. If they were to ask, then this Swaminathan would have said that it is because there's a hole in the arms bowl. But they didn't ask. Therefore, they looked at that. They looked up to this chief Swaminathan. And then, therefore, when few generations passed, it became a tradition. It became customary for them to do that before proceeding on arms round. Why did I say that? Where did that story come from? So, when this head monk did that, it became customary, and then everyone started doing that because they didn't ask why he did that. Therefore, it was interpreted in whatever the way that they wanted, the Swaminathas wanted. So, therefore, your karma record book is also like that. We tend to feel that the interpretations and meanings are always in this way. The deals that we do, the transactions we make in this world are always in this way. Okay, so I came to... it got into my head. So, why did I say that story? Is because people back then, they used to exchange goods. They used to exchange goods. And so when I grow something, I give it to you. You grow something and you give it to me. So... but then, meanings of those things, just over time, they degraded. They disappeared. Because the Arhatun Vahanses passed into Parinibbana, and therefore people stopped associating Arhatun. I mean, they weren't Arhatun Vahanses to associate. And then the society slowly started moving away from that those customary things, those traditions. And it just became a tradition to exchange goods. The meanings were hidden. They went away because there was no one to explain the meanings. And they were just exchanging goods, and it just became exchanging goods. But back then, why they did that was because they had a big understanding about this. Because if I'm exchanging goods and I'm happy to give it to you, I'm actually giving. So that means I'm actually putting something into the karma record book. So therefore, what you give is what you get. Give and you shall get. What you give is what you get. So I'm actually putting something into the karma record book because I'm giving it happily to you. So I'm doing a merit. I'm giving. And that person is giving to me, and therefore he's doing a merit as well. So that is the meaning behind that. But then it became customary over time, and it just became a method of exchanging goods. The meanings got hidden. And therefore, when someone came and told them that this exchanging of goods is just a very old-fashioned idea. This is very old. This is old school. But there's something called money. So you don't actually need to give something, but you can give this instead. You can give money instead and then get the good. And then it was put into the other person's head, you can give something and then get the money that you need and then buy whatever you want with this money. So the money exchange method came on. And because there weren't any meanings behind the good exchange, the goods exchange, they were ready to accept that. They were ready to accept money exchange. They thought, actually, that's a good idea. That is a good idea. So you can actually keep the money and then buy whatever you want whenever you need it. I mean, isn't that a good idea? That came down to this. When people start dealing with each other, when people start thinking that they deal with each other, when they stop believing in karma and vipaka. But this is called the kammasagata sammaditti. Believing in karma and vipaka. It is the first step towards sammaditti. which is the right way. It is the first step towards the right way. Kammasagata Sammadhitti, believing in karma and vipaka. That everything happens according to your karma record book. Everything is recorded there. Every single thing. Every single thing that we do is recorded there. And then every single thing that we experience is out of the karma record book. It's not from another person. So we don't deal with other people. But think about when the price is high for something. We tend to feel, why is this price so high? So we are giving money out of disappointment. Even if we give money to buy something, this is something that we have to buy. We're giving money out of disappointment. Why is this so? Why the price is so high? Do you think that creates good karma? Do you think that is a merit? Do you think that is giving? No. So that's what happened when the meanings went away. Then the goods exchange was just a customary, it was just tradition. That's the way that people used to do it. They forgot that it's just that the meanings didn't come down from generation to generation. That is how anything is. Skip 600 years into the future. And then even in this place, you'll see that the meanings are not there. I mean, that is normal. That is how this world is. That is how this universe balances itself. Because for the universe, it's just, it doesn't matter whether it's you or me. It just needs someone to fill in the blanks. It just needs someone. It just needs just one mind. It doesn't need you or me to attend Nibbana. It has a void of 10 people, and therefore, it fills in the gaps of those 10 people with someone. But personally taken is not personally you or me. In the scale of the universe, it doesn't matter for it. So it's just someone should be there. Someone has to be there for Nibbana. Someone has to be there for this. So that is how deals happen as well. Because when you're in a certain environment, then a vipaka according to that environment starts attracting into your mind. That is why noble friendship is very valuable. Because when you're in the noble environment, vipaka according to, so the good things that you have done will start coming into your mind. Will start arising minds from those good vipaka. From the meritorious vipaka that you've done. But if you're among thieves, what will happen? Then, that vipaka, again, it is your vipaka that is coming down to you. Let's say you're robbed. Something of you is stolen. That is your vipaka. It's not thieves' fault. They just created one. So when one day when Arithuna was walking on a paddy field, so to walk on the paddy fields, there are small paths that are made. I don't know what they're called in English. They're called niyara in singular. Does anyone know the English word for that? It's just small pathways on the paddy field. So if you have seen paddy field, so it looks sort of like this. So it's just these paths. So an Arithuna was walking on all of them. And then another man with a herd of buffaloes was coming towards the Arithuna Mahanse. And then this man wasn't a devoted man. This man was a very grumpy man. And then when he came towards the Arithuna Mahanse, he pushed the Arithuna Mahanse into the paddy field, and then told that, get out of the way, and then he just continues his journey with the buffaloes. So then a very devoted person, an Upasaka Mahatya, saw this Arithuna Mahanse, saw this the whole scene, this situation. And then He was very angry at that man. He got very scared. He was very upset about that. And then he went to the Arjitunahanse and then cleaned his robes and then took the Arjitunahanse, ushered the Arjitunahanse to his house and then gave him a place to bath and then washed his clothes and did all of that and offered a new robe and offered alms as well. And then he was telling this Arjitunahanse, Swaminathan, look, this person, he's just a very bad person. He's just a very bad guy. And then Arjitunahanse said, ha. Don't say that to Upasaka Mahatya. He did what he did for himself. You did what you did for him. You did what you did for yourself. But there's nothing for me. Why he said that is because if this is the Arjitunahanse, an arrow wouldn't go this way. For the Arjitunahanse, this arrow is not there. So therefore, there's nothing for the Arjitunahanse. It's just this arrow. He just finished one of the karmas, one of the vipakas that he had collected in the past. But for the two people, one accumulated merits, the other accumulated demerits. There's nothing for the Arjitunahanse. So just like that, there aren't deals with people, with each other. There aren't anything like that. So you can't say that it is this person who beat me up. You got beaten up because of your own karma. Check your karma record book and then ask the universe. Ask the god of karma. So in Greek mythology you have different gods for different things, right? So the god of lightning is, or the god of the sky is Zeus. And then god of Zeus is the Poseidon. So you have different gods of in Greek mythology for different things. The god of messages is Iris or Hermes, I can't remember. So you have different gods in Greek mythology for different things. So just like that, ask the god of karma. Whenever you are in an unfavorable situation, whenever you start feeling that it is this person that is the problem, whenever you are in a situation like that, ask the god of karma. Is it in my book? Now I see why I got this. When you start seeing this like that, seeing the world like that, in the sense of karma and vipaka, in the sense of you're getting the things that you have done, when you start to see like that, then you actually become compassionate towards this world. Because, just think about it, if you're getting the things that you have done, let's say someone's yelling at you. Now that is a thing that you have done. But what is it for the someone? What is it for that person? You're relieving out of one of your bad deeds are getting finished. But for that person, he's creating one. So when you start seeing the world in this way, you'll start to feel compassionate towards the world, towards all people. Because even if they're doing something wrong, they're creating something for them to experience in the future. They're creating something for them to experience, they're creating a bad experience for themselves in the future. Because that goes into their karma record book. That is what they're doing. So you start feeling compassion. You start to feel compassion towards them, and then you wouldn't react in any sort of way against it. You would just accept it, because you see that it is karma and vipaka, and you don't have a deal with this person. It's just the environment that you're in is causing this vipaka to attract. If you were to be in a different environment, then it wouldn't be that karma that attracted. It wouldn't be that karma that your mind was born with. So then you'll be very compassionate towards the whole world, because you start feeling that you're living with your own karma. So why people say that these people have gotten rich by doing wrong things and all that? It is not so, because that person got rich because he has good things in his karma record book. That is why he's rich. That is why he's experiencing a very comfortable life today. But he might be doing wrong things today. That is going back into his karma record book. One day, he'll experience the results of that. He'll reap the results of that. But it might not be today. Because of the things that he had done in the past, the good things that he had done in the past, he's experiencing all the good things today. He's living a comfortable life today. But that lifestyle is not being given to him by doing wrong things. That is being given to him by doing the right things or the good things in the past. He might be doing wrong things today, but that he'll experience later. It might not be today. So no one can do wrong things and live a good life. Or no one can do bad things and live a good life. If you do wrong things, they will come to you when they come. But it doesn't mean that good things won't come. That is why the Lord Buddha had said that Papopi passati badran yava papanna pacchati yadacha pacchati papam atapapo papam na passati. So a person might seem as doing papa, bad things. But Papopi passati badran. Badra means good. But he's experiencing good. And this stanza has the other way around as well. Badropi pasati papam. Those are the days that when you feel that you're doing good all the time, but you're actually experiencing frustration in life and you're going through lot in life. But you're doing good at that time. But you're experiencing that frustration, you're going through a lot in life, you're going through a very downside in life because of the things that you have done in the past. Because they're in your karma record book. Not because you're doing good today. The results of you doing good today will come later. And no one can stop that. So this is what's called kammasagata samadhi. The belief in the karma and vipaka. Because it is what is there actually. It is what's behind the scenes all the time, everywhere, in every single place. So try to live your life like this, thinking on these, checking on your karma record book. Always go back to your karma record book. Always ask Mr. Universe, don't ask Mr. Universe. Like Miss Universe. So don't ask them. Always ask the God of Universe. Or the God of Karma. Always ask him. Do I have this in my book? Okay, then I'll experience it. Then I'll go through it. Because you have to go through it if it's in your book. Today or someday. It's like when you open the shower. If the water is cold, what do you do? Typically, what you do, if you open the shower and the water is cold, you wait. Why do you wait? Now or 10 minutes later, you have to go in that shower. It doesn't all of a sudden become hot water, unless you have the hot water tap, but if it's the cold water tap that you have to get in, even if you go in now, or 10 minutes later, you're going in the same cold water. So there's no point in waiting. So therefore, if something bad happens to you, be happy about it. And when you understand this, you can actually be happy about it. Because, I cleared that off my book. If something bad happens, then be happy about it. Because you cleared that off your book. One thing just cleared. Oh, that's a good thing. One bad thing just cleared out of your book. One thing out of infinity cleared, and infinity more to go. Let's say it's just 1,000. So one thing out of 1,000 cleared, and then 999 more to go. And then be happy about the bad thing, and then rejoice in that as well. You can be happy when bad events come to your life. But when good events come to your life, you should be scared. Why? Because your merits are gone. Now you should be scared. So when you come to the monastery, so you should be very happy when you're among thieves. More than when you come to the monastery. Why I say that is because when you're with thieves, all your bad things are getting reduced. You're hearing bad words and they're yelling at you and they might steal things from you. All your bad things are getting cleared, your karma record book. But when you're at the monastery, this whole slot empties when you spend one day. Good thing when you listen to sermons, you earn merits. But otherwise, you'll go with an empty book of good deeds. Your good column is empty. So actually, you should be scared to be in the Noble Association. That's very ironical. You should be in Noble Association, but you should be scared to be in Noble Association. Because whenever someone comes in front of you and then say, Teruvan Sarnai, one thing goes out. Whenever someone offers a glass of water to you, another goes out. And depending on who offers us that glass of water, depending on their understanding, so there's no such thing as a free lunch. So although the life in the monastery, when you're spending your life, when you're spending your day in the monastery, it looks very calm and peaceful and serene, and your whole mind is settled, you're paying for that. Although we don't charge. We have charged you in advance. When you enter through the gates, we charge you. As soon as you enter, someone says Teruvan Sarnai to you, right? At least an anagarika matya. So without you knowing it, they cut off your credit card. Without you knowing it, they charge from your credit card. They have your details. They have your credit details. Your account has been hacked. Because it is not you who controls that transaction. It is the god of karma that controls that card transaction. When someone says Teruvan Sarnai, you need to pay for that. And then he cuts it off your card. He cuts it off your account. When someone offers a glass of water, you didn't pay for that, I'll take it out of your account. And every meal you take here, who cooks them? You know who cooks them. So, many more out of this. So when you're here, do as many merits as possible. It is merits that will take you towards Nibbana. It is merits that will lubricate your path towards Nibbana. It is all his merits. Okay, I think the time given to us has already been passed. So always keep this in your mind. And when events come into your life, check with the God of Karma. Check with your karma record book. And then you'll understand that it is just the things that I have done coming to me. We'll start from that. And then we'll discuss whether it is things that you have done coming to you next week. Okay, so we'll transfer the merits and conclude the sermon for today. Let us take a moment to transfer the merits we have acquired throughout the day by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem. Observing the precepts and engaging in various meritorious deeds throughout the day. First and foremost, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teachings. And with immense gratitude, let us transfer these merits to the bhikkhus, bhikkhunis, upasikas and upasikas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Lord Buddha and have passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage as in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let's also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all the chapters who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves to the benefit of all sentient beings. Let's not forget that among them are the monks and nuns resident in our local temples and nunneries who have always been by our side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to our teacher, Guru Swami Nahansi, and all the other monks resident at this monastery, as well as the Anagarikas and Anagarika communities attached to the monastery. Let's also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the people who take great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Lord Buddha, be that by sharing their sermons with others or inviting others to join them, may by the power of these merits. If any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plains, may by the power of these merits. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nirvana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the devotees, friends of the monastery, who for the sake of merits can continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone from those of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, and those of you who have provided the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes, and medicines, and those of you who have provided their know-how and extended their well wishes, may by the power of these merits. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to our mothers, fathers, brothers and sisters, our uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, and to anyone and everyone who has helped us, supported us, assisted us in any way, shape or form, may by the power of these merits. May they be healed of any physical and mental ailments, overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the devas, brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the numerous gods and deities who are committed to protect and fulfill the Sambhuta Sasane. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all our guardian deities who keep watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way, may by the power of these merits, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all who have been our friends, families, and acquaintances in this infinite long journey of samsara. Let's take a moment to transfer these merits to them. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the members of the armed forces as well as the police force who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all who lost their lives in war be their friend or foe, rejoice in the merits they have acquired throughout the day. Let's also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the people who lost their lives in natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides and pandemics, reminding ourselves that among them will be those who have been friends and family to us in this infinitely long journey of samsara. Let's take a moment to transfer these merits to them, may by the power of these merits. If any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plains, may by the power of these merits. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, let us all make a resolve that may by the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arahants on this blessed land, and may by the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day and throughout our whole samsara, may you and I and everyone who has helped make these programs a success become an Arhat Mahanse or an Arhantmeni Mahanse in this very life and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. Now the Mahasangha will transfer their blessings to you. Raga kinnan midatnwa dvesha kinnan midatnwa. dattva mohaginnan midattva nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravatva nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravatva mamada siyalu loka siyalu satvayo nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravatva nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravatva nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravatva raga gini niveva dvesha gini niveva moha gini niveva nivansapa labeva nivansapa labeva nivansapa labeva
tunruwange suvisi ananta maha guna belen siru loka siru satyama nibbana parama sukhen sukhita taravatva sadhu sadhu sadhu.